Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got some very, very interesting things going on right now. We're going to start off with a synopsis and quite a summary. It's only a few minutes long, but listen to this whole thing. Don Bongino, he's former Secret Service and so forth. He's been an investigator most of his life, and he's turned an author. He's an author of Spygate, and it lays out this real problem when they started spying on President Trump. Actually, they started spying on him when he was only still on the campaign trail. And then that moved on into the White House and so forth. But anyway, listen to Dan Bongino. He's a fine person, upright person, and he'll lay out a synopsis and a summary of the real problem that the opposition has to President Trump. And that's the Hillary Clinton gang. And they have really committed some major, major violations of federal law and so forth. But listen carefully to this.
And the reason I wrote the book, this whole spying scandal, this debacle, this atrocious disgrace of a scandal that happened to our president, you know, a lot of cops, federal agents in the room, anyone have experience in law enforcement? Yeah, a couple, raise your hand. If I'm wrong, call me out on this, but when I was a cop and then a Secret Service agent, if you have even an ounce of empathy for human beings, which most of you in this room have more than an ounce, you have a whole lot, you'll arrest a lot of bad people for a lot of really bad things. But one of the things that impacted me so deeply in my life, I'm not going to say the guy's name for obvious reasons, but let's call him John Doe. You know, we hit a door at about 6 o'clock in the morning to arrest this guy in a credit card fraud scheme, and it was ugly. I mean, it had been hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you're a federal agent, you don't get to arrest people for like $5 petty crimes or anything like that. They'll throw you right out of there. It was a serious crime. We arrested the guy, and I remember after working on this case for 6 months, there was this sense of accomplishment tempered immediately by this awful feeling in my gut. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, you arrest them, and you don't anticipate the human side of it. Well, what happened? The guy's young kids ran out. That's their dad. He actually wasn't the worst guy in the world. He was actually a good father to his kids, and they're watching their father in handcuffs. And the wife is crying, their life is over. Now, the guy was a bad guy, don't get me wrong. But again, we're all human beings, and I've got to tell you almost scarred me for the rest of my time. I kept thinking to myself, I couldn't get that image out of my head. What bothers me about that and how that ties to this Spygate thing and why this whole thing has consumed the last year and a half of my life is that guy was an actual bad guy. Imagine if you find out you're the President of the United States, all you did was win an election, and you find out the massive machinery of the federal government with the ability to slap bracelets on you in the form of handcuffs, take your life and your freedom, was turned against you. Folks, this happened. This is the biggest scandal of our generation. There's no close second. This makes Watergate look like romper room. Now, I only have about 20 minutes or so to get through this. This is usually about a 45-minute speech. I just gave it in California. But I promise you, there wasn't one person falling asleep the entire time. I'm going to walk you through what happened. It's all in the book, by the way, in great detail. And what we did in the book, if you choose to buy it or not, it's totally up to you. I'm happy to sign them. I won't leave until I sign every one of them. But read the footnotes. We deliberately did not use footnotes from right-leaning resources. I used CNN, the Washington Post, the New York Times, because anyone who tells you, oh, this didn't happen, just go to the footnotes and say, did you read this article? It happened, folks. The President of the United States had the intelligence community and the law enforcement community of the United States at the highest levels weaponized against him. Now, I like to break it down simply into how they did this. They had Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. And the joke of the whole thing, and when I say joke, I don't mean funny, I mean a tragic joke, is it wasn't known as Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. You know why? They thought Plan A was just fine, so it was just the plan. When Plan A failed, they had to move on to Plan B and then Plan C, which is the cleanup operation. Here's how this whole thing starts against Donald Trump. During the election, the Obama administration, which had done whatever it wants because the media is lost in this country, folks. Total, there's no media. Forget it. That's dead and buried. The media is done. They don't do journalism anymore. It's activism, nothing more, right? The Obama administration had grown comfortable with the idea of weaponizing government against their political enemies. It had happened over and over again. We had the IRS scandal. We had the AP phone record scandal, the Jim Rosen Fox News scandal. And I ask you this, what happened to any of the people involved? Anyone? Yeah, the answer is nothing. I have to do zeros like this now. Because I used to do zeros like this, but I found out through the liberal media that somehow this means like a white power symbol now or something. I thought it meant okay or zero, but the media says, no, I'm serious, like these idiots in the media will tell you. So now I do zeros like that because I'm like afraid of some media idiot. These people are crazy. The Obama administration had gotten completely comfortable with the idea of abusing government for their political means. So what happens? This plan gets hatched, and I'm going to be candid with you. Where exactly it's hatched, nobody is yet sure of to this day. Matter of fact, if you're familiar with my commentary on Fox, I say often one of the great mysteries of this case is what's paragraph one? Paragraph one, what do I mean by that? When I was a federal agent, when you arrest someone, you have to do what's called an MR, a memorandum report. Paragraph one of that MR is always how the case started. I got a call from Jane Doe, bank fraud investigator, said this credit card number was stolen on April 14, 2015. I made a few calls, and the next thing you know, it's an 80-page report about this massive scheme. Paragraph one, though, always lays it out. Always. Do you know to this day we still have no idea what paragraph one, the why they started to spy on the Trump team was? Now, I get it. It was for political. I get that. But at some point, somebody, you have to understand, folks, had to put down on paper a semi-legitimate reason to start the most massive spying operation in a political campaign in U.S. history. Do you know nobody to this day will tell you what that is? I know what it is. So the first plan they do to hit the Trump team, folks, is they learn to manipulate these about queries. In the NSA database. The NSA is a database of a whole boatload of information. Metadata, texts, that kind of stuff. How it works is too complicated in the time I have. But what you can do is you can query that NSA system and you can get a whole lot of information. But what happens? This is plan A. This is how they're going to get the information. I hope, if I'm not following, please stop me. Because this is important. The Obama administration figures out that through unmasking, in other words, wiretapping people, pretending they're targeting foreigners, and then querying information in this database, that they can get all the political opposition research in the world that they need against the Trump team. It's beautiful. No one's going to call them out. The media's on their side, right? But there's a good guy in this. There's a white hat. Somebody in the government sniffs this thing out. That's why I tell you, this wasn't plan A. This was the plan. They were going to unmask people, wiretap people, and they were going to query this NSA database and get all the information they needed about the Trump team. But somebody smells a problem, and he's not having it. And he's the white hat. He's the good guy in this story. And it's Mike Rogers of the NSA. Mike Rogers of the NSA senses that there's something wrong about these about queries. In other words, who's tapping into the database here and making political queries? Now, folks, some of you, I don't know your politics. I assume most of you are conservative, libertarian, or Republican, but that's fine either way. If you doubt any of what I'm telling you, just Google the FISA Intelligence Surveillance Court, their report on about queries. Because Mike Rogers goes to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and says, Houston, we got a problem. These queries are supposed to follow very specific guidelines about terrorism and all these metrics have to be. You can't just spy on Americans in the database. The FISA court looks into it, comes back with a report that was released in March of 2017. Ladies and gentlemen, that is devastating. If you haven't read it, you are doing yourself a great disservice. Page 80 specifically is horrifying. Apparently, the NSA database was being queried by private contractors working with the FBI. These were not even government officials. People within the government were using private contractors to query information they had no judicial or legal authority whatsoever to look at. Rogers smells a rat. People panic in the government. Now, conveniently, what happens right after the election? I'm going to put these pieces together and things will start to make sense. Donald Trump's elected. He's the president-elect, right? 10 days after the election, Rogers, who knows this has been going on the whole time, these unmaskings, the tapping of the... Now does the Donald Trump tweet, they tap Trump Tower, now does it make sense? He got the wording wrong. He didn't understand exactly how it worked, but the idea was not wrong. Donald Trump's not stupid, trust me. Guy got elected president, earned $1 billion. I love how these journalists criticize him. Journalist, the guy's making $25,000 a year writing clickbait pieces for BuzzFeed. Like, Donald Trump's an idiot. Hard pass, brother. Like, well, the guy just won the president. He runs for office the first time and he becomes the president. But let me listen to Joey Bag of Donuts at BuzzFeed. You're right. You've got this. It's like, so about 10 days after the election, Donald Trump, someone goes up to visit Donald Trump in Trump Tower. Who visits him? Mike Rogers. But Rogers doesn't tell anyone. This is going to trip you out totally. He doesn't tell anybody in the White House he's going up there. He visits Trump in Trump Tower, conveniently 10 days after the election, which from my experience in the Secret Service is just enough time for them to go up to Trump Tower, WACA, the White House Communications Agency, for the president-elect, and set up a SCIF, where they can talk privately, a sensitive compartmentalized information facility. In other words, a place where no one can listen in. Rogers gives it about 10 days, goes up there, has this big meeting with Donald Trump, and what happens the very next day? Donald Trump evacuates Trump Tower and goes to Bedminster, New Jersey to never return for another meeting. You think that was a coinkydink? Like he did that by accident? Oh, let's just go up to Bedminster. I got nothing else to do. Now, again, this is all in the book in intricate detail. The greatest spy story ever told, except the fact that it actually happened. And it happened against you. Rogers has this meeting. Trump evacuates Trump Tower. The very next day, the Obama administration comes out and calls for somebody to be fired. Who's that somebody? Mike Rogers. And they start blaming it on things like drone strikes and other stuff. Like, really? Could you be any more obvious? The Obama administration knows Rogers is the good guy and fills Trump in on this entire debacle. He probably goes up there and says, brother, they're spying on you, like right now. He doesn't know, but now he does. So he leaves. All of a sudden, people start resigning from the federal government after that. You know who also resigns? Bob Hannigan. Now, who's Bob Hannigan? Bob Hannigan is the head of the GCHQ, which is the British NSA. Well, why do you think the head of the British NSA would resign right after that Rogers meeting, right after Trump finds out about this massive spying operation? I'm going to tell you why right now. I'm not taking a selfie of you. I'm not taking a selfie of myself. I'm going to read to you a headline. This is from CNN. See it right there. I didn't Photoshop this. April 14th, 2017. Remember who Bob Hannigan is. He's the head of the British NSA. British intelligence passed Trump associates' communications with Russians on to U.S. counterparts. You think I'm making this up? That's CNN. I didn't write it. They wrote that. So not only is the United States government in Plan A weaponizing its intelligence community to listen in and computer search the Trump team to hurt them during the campaign for political oppo, they're working with the British and the Australians to pass information about the Trump team onto the Obama administration. Don't take it from me. Take it from CNN. They find out about this. Now, this thing breaks down about halfway through. They move on to plan B. Sorry, there's a lot more to plan A, but I, in the interest of time, I want to get through this because the cleanup operation is important. They move on to plan B. What's plan B? They realize Rogers is onto them. They're like, hey, folks, we better ease up on the unmasking and the tapping into the database. People are getting caught. This is probably not good. We're leaving a massive paper trail. And what if we lose, right? They move on to plan B. Plan B is Crossfire Hurricane. They say, well, listen, if we can't spy on them illegally, let's just spy on them legally. We have this beautiful thing called the FISA court, where we can walk into the FISA court, we can get a warrant on somebody, and when you get a warrant on somebody in the Trump team, they have this beautiful thing for the Obama administration called the two-hop rule. Well, it's for everyone, that's for Obama. Meaning, if I spy on you, and you're a member of the Trump team, I can hop to everybody you emailed, and then everybody they emailed. So basically, all I need to do is get a FISA warrant on the guy cleaning the floors in Trump Tower, and I've got everyone. Because if he emailed his boss, and his boss emailed Don Jr., I get everybody. Beautiful, right? Not really. Because they were stupid. They were dumb. And they screwed up. The problem with the FISA court, unlike the unmaskings and the tapping into the database, is they had to produce actual evidence in front of a judge. There was a judge in a FISA court that needed evidence that the Trump team was working on behalf of a foreign power, but critically doing it in violation of at least one U.S. law. Folks, they had nothing. They had zero. Do you understand they, to this day, have absolutely zero, zero. Remember, don't do it one hand. It's a big mistake. Media people, you'll be a white power person after that. You always do it that way. They had zero evidence at all. I'm only half kidding. That's how worried I am about the media. They're so crazy these days, right? They had nothing on collusion. Nothing. Zero. So what does the FBI and the State Department and the DOJ do? They say, well, we don't really have any evidence. Let's just make it up. We've got this guy we worked with in the past, this guy Christopher Steele. Now I'm going to do this. I'm not taking a selfie again. I'm not taking a picture of you. Don't you worry. I'm going to read to you another headline. You need to write this down because this one's going to blow your mind. Any of you read the dossier? You haven't, right? Not many people have. You should. If you haven't read the dossier, don't you worry. Because the dossier was already written back on April 17th of 2007. You're like, what do you mean? I don't get it. It's 2017, right? No. I didn't get that wrong. It's written right here in the Wall Street Journal on April 17th, 2007. Who's the author of this critical Wall Street Journal piece? Glenn Simpson and Mary Jacoby, his wife. Glenn Simpson, the purveyor of Fusion GPS. The article is called, How Lobbyists Help Ex-Soviets Woo Washington. Folks, I dare you to take a moment and read that piece. Put it next to the dossier. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's the same story. It was written 11 years ago. Glenn Simpson clearly had this information about Russian influence in Washington. He wrote 10 years ago. Read the names in the article. You know who appears in this article? Paul Manafort, all of these players. So what likely happened after Plan A collapses is they say, listen, let's go to the FISA court and do this legally, but we need evidence. We don't have evidence. Don't worry. Hillary Clinton's got a guy at Fusion GPS, says he's got a story to tell. Ladies and gentlemen, Glenn Simpson took his Wall Street Journal piece like it was a movie script, scratched out the names, put Donald Trump's name in there and said, look, do I got a story for you guys? It's all BS. The whole dossier is crap. Read the article. It's a movie script they recycled. It's a fairy, it's an Aesop's fable. It's made up. It's a scam. There is not a scintilla of evidence that it's true. Now, the big question on plan B till I move through the mop-up operation, plan C. Now they're in trouble. They're in a lot of trouble. Because they realize the dossier in and of itself is crap. And a lot of people at the Bureau know it. They need to buttress it with some stuff to make it a little harder. Now's where the Michael Cohen story comes in, Trump's lawyer. In the dossier is a very specific allegation, right? that Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, went over to Prague to set up this whole information exchange with the Russians, right? Well, what's the problem? Michael Cohen had never been to Prague, and his passport proved it. Where do you think they got that name, Michael Cohen? You're darn right. They probably were in that NSA database looking up a Michael Cohen, and they got the wrong guy. I know there's only one Dan Bongino. I can tell you for sure there are a whole lot of Michael Cohens. Are you right? John Smith, John Brown, Cohen, these are common last names. They got the wrong Michael Cohen. So now you should be asking yourself, who the heck was Glenn Simpson dealing with in the government that gave him that name? And how did they get it? Plan B falls apart too. Plan B falls apart because something happens in November. Donald Trump wins. Nobody, I'm telling you, take it to the bank, cash this check, and spend the money. Nobody saw that coming. No one. Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to get in. This was all going to go away. They were going to appoint their own attorney general, probably John Brennan. And this story is never, ever to see the light of day, not in their lifetimes. But make no mistake, they know what they did. They all know what they did. Every single one of them. So they have to move on to Plan C. Plan C, I call it clean up on aisle four. Now they're in trouble. They know they've got white hats in the government. I know one of them right now that's still in the FBI that's unquestionably cooperating with this investigation, if you know how to read the tea leaves. And if you read the book, you'll figure out who it is. People start cooperating and talking, and now people are panicking. Now does John Brennan's meltdown after the election make sense? He's the head of the intelligence community who, again, another thing for you to Google, but it's all in the book again. Who do you think John Brennan met with right before the election at the, quote, director level as reported on by multiple media outlets? Bob Hannigan, the same guy from the British intelligence agency that quits right after Trump's election. He quits 10 days after and doesn't tell anybody about it. He says, oh, I'm leaving for family reasons. What do you mean? You related to Donald Trump? What do you mean family reasons? Family reasons, your reason, you're leaving because Donald Trump got elected. Who also quits? John Carlin. Who's John Carlin? He's the head of the Department of Justice National Security Division, the final division in the Department of Justice to put their John Hancock on the FISA warrant. He quits right after the election. Who did John Carlin work for? Now cleanup on aisle four is going to start to make sense. Who did John Carlin work for before he got there into the DOJ? He's Bob Mueller's chief of staff. He was Bob Mueller's chief. Now does Bob Mueller make sense? Clean up aisle four. Get the mops out. Everybody realizes they're all going down. They faked a FISA warrant. They have been involved in massive unmaskings. Susan Rice, Samantha Power. They have been busted by the FISA court, tapping into the NSA database for about queries. They left a paper trail 65 miles long. Bob Mueller has to clean this whole mess up. Bob Mueller is the only... Do you notice how right away they had the name? So Bob Mueller's old chief of staff. He's the cleanup guy. Make no mistake. Bob Mueller's job right now is one thing and one thing only. Keep the heat on Donald Trump relentlessly for anything. Jaywalking, ripping off mattress tags, combing his hair the wrong way. Keep the attention on Trump no matter what, because the minute the Bob Mueller thing is dissolved, all of this is going to come out, and it is hell hath no fury. Folks, they left a paper trail. They can't run from this. Mueller is brought in to get Trump impeached. Because they don't want any of this to see the light of day. Now, why Mueller? Mueller knows every player involved in this and has intimate connections with all of them. The guy who signs off on the BS FISA warrant, John Carlin, his old chief of staff. His chief bulldog in the case, Andy Weissman. Andrew Weissman worked with Bob Mueller. Andy Weissman was the chief prosecutor on the Enron case when Bob Mueller was the FBI director. Remember the Enron case that they screwed up royally? That's how they know each other. Andy Weissman hates Donald Trump. He's on emails congratulating Sally Yates for telling Donald Trump to go pound sand. Well, it gets better. Who else does Bob Mueller know? On Bob Mueller's Enron team, it all goes back to Enron. That same Enron team, headed by Andy Weissman, had another lead lawyer on the case. Who was it? Catherine Rumler. Who's Catherine Rumler? Obama's White House counsel, who was Obama's lawyer while all of this was going on. They know each other. Now, you may say, fine, so Bob Mueller knows Obama's lawyer while this whole Spygate thing was going on. What's the big deal? You Google George Nader, Daily Beast. You can read an article today. Just popped today before we showed up. One of Bob Mueller's lead cooperators in this case, who's been selling out members of the Trump team from day one, is a guy named George Nader. Who's George Nader's lawyer? Catherine Rumler, Obama's White House counsel and Bob Mueller's buddy. The lawyer for the lead witness in this case feeding information to Mueller is Obama's White House counsel, otherwise known as the fixer. She fixed everything for them. She was involved in Benghazi. She was involved in the IRS. She was involved in the Secret Service scandal. Just Google her name, put in any one of those things, and who's the person giving the statement? Catherine Rumler. Who was also on that Enron task force? Lisa Monaco. Barack Obama's Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor in the White House while all of this was going on. They all know each other. Finally, and I'll take some questions. Your final piece to the cleanup on aisle four operation. Who else does Bob Mueller know? Who now has control over this, I should say, right now in the Department of Justice, right? Rod Rosenstein, right? Because Sessions had recused himself, now Whitaker's in there, which was a good appointment, right? A case happens a little while ago, the 10X case. It's around 2015 or so. It happens in Maryland. I'm familiar with it because I worked in Maryland as a Secret Service agent in Baltimore. I wasn't involved in that case at all, but I know the office well. The 10X case goes down in Maryland. The 10X case, a cooperator for the United States government paid $50,000 by the FBI, comes to the FBI with some troubling information that the Russians are helping the Iranians build their nuclear program and that there's a company helping Russians get a hold of our uranium. It's called the 10X case. It was the precursor to something you may have heard about, the Uranium One operation. The same players are involved. The case gets thrown out on a BS press release on a Friday night so nobody will pay attention. Everybody's gag ordered, and it all goes away. That the Obama administration, an FBI paid informant, admitted that we were given the Russians uranium while they were building the Iranian nuclear program and chanting death to America. Who was the lead prosecutor on that 10X case, the precursor to Uranium One? Rod Rosenstein. And who's the FBI director? Bob Mueller. Folks, they all know each other. This is the biggest scam in American history. Folks, I beg of you. I really do. You cannot let your legislative people, your congressman or anyone off the hook. Whatever connections you have, you need to keep the heat on this. Because if these people don't go down the right way, unlike the Obama administration tried to do it to us, this will happen again. I'm telling you, what they did was such a grotesque, horrendous abuse of power. It disgusts me to this day, and I will never, ever forget that story about that guy we arrested and his crying kid that morning who wasn't going to see his dad for another year. That's a horrible thing to have to do to someone, and it's a grotesque thing to do to someone to unleash the power of the federal government when they did nothing wrong. And Donald Trump did nothing wrong. And if you read the book, and by the way, one last thing before I get to the questions. It's not a narrative. You don't have to read it straight through. It's written like a police file. I think that's why it's been selling like crazy. You can read the last chapter first. You can go right. It's written like a police file because the names, like I said, this is an hour-long speech I compressed into 20-plus minutes. The names never stop coming up again, ever. Oleg Deripaska, connected to Vladimir Putin, who's connected to Adam Waldman, a lobbyist who's emailing and texting Mark Warner, a Democrat on the Senate committee. Who's Waldman working for, too? Christopher Steele, the guy working for Hillary. They're connected to the Russians. The people that show up at the Trump Tower meeting, Veselnitskaya with Don Jr. and Rinat Akhmetshin. Veselnitskaya works for Fusion GPS on a separate case. And Akhmetshin the other guy, the Russian intel guy that shows up at the Trump Tower meeting, you know who his lawyer is? Edward Lieberman. You know who Lieberman's wife is? Evelyn Lieberman. Bill Clinton's old chief of staff.
That speech is 27 minutes long, I think. He actually, I cut it off a little early. But anyway, that speech lays out a summary of the real problems that the Hillary gang has. Now, Hillary gang is backed by the biggest money in the world, and they want Trump out, period. But also, I'm going to play one more clip. And Sean Hannity interviewed John Solomon and Sarah Carter recently, just last Friday. And they're going to give a few more details. There were Russians run in on this. There was some British activity and connection also to unseating Trump and to spy on him and things like this. But anyway, this is Sean Hannity interviewing John Solomon and Sarah Carter. And there's new information breaking possibly Monday on this. And listen carefully to this also. Here we go now.
Joining us now, Fox News contributor Sarah Carter, who, by the way, on Hannity.com, brand new opioid documentary. It is really well done. My radio producer, Linda McLaughlin, and her, it's so well done. I have a chance to watch it. Congratulations. And also from The Hill, John Solomon. John, let's start with your breaking report. So We have all these entrees into all these Trump people just before the election. It sounds like the whole thing was thought out, planned out, and set up. Explain.
Yeah, and you know, the origin of this story, Sean, is last Tuesday night when I was on your show, you had Congressman Nunez on just before us, and I was listening. He said something I had not heard in all the months that we've been working on this case. He said, beyond the Steele dossier, there was a very troubling effort to come up with other evidence that would corroborate the Steele dossier that was suspect, and it was just as bad evidence, and it might have also included exculpatory information that had been hidden. So I went back and started digging, and this is what I found. Six different people volunteer, inject themselves into the Trump organization between March and October that have direct ties to the FBI or U.S. intelligence. Two Russians inject themselves into the operation during that time. Both are here in the United States only on a U.S. Justice Department parole visa. That's another fact. Two more Western intelligence or Western diplomats intersect or start relationships with key people in the Trump organization and all have the same overture. Either I've got dirt on Hillary Clinton or I got a nice deal for you. Would you like to talk to me? It looks like a targeted operation to start to probe whether there was something going on here. And here's the most troubling thing. When you go back and look at Devin Nunes's comments on your show last Tuesday, he said this evidence was worse in quality and perhaps also had more exculpatory information, and yet it wasn't disclosed properly to the FISA court. We may have two corrupt lines of evidence flowing in to try to justify this investigation.
So then, Sarah, we would have the dossier, which is in one corner. Then we have the spies that we already knew in the campaign. Then you've got intel people secretly trying to basically infiltrate and, I don't know if the word tempt, entice Trump, people close to Trump. How would you characterize it?
I would characterize it as if they didn't have any evidence of a crime and they're sending all of these informants in, allegedly, these six informants, and they're enticing them with real estate deals or I've got information on Hillary Clinton that's going to help your campaign. I would call that a setup, Sean. Straight and simple. Look, if they're collecting information, by the way, let's not forget, they were also collecting information on Americans through unmaskings. And John and I broke those stories well over a year and a half ago. There was over 300 that Samantha Power alone collected, and we still don't have information on that. So they weaponize the intelligence system and the intelligence apparatus. They go after specific targets within the Trump campaign. Here's a question that I'd like to ask, and I think the FBI needs to answer. Did they debrief the Hillary Clinton campaign? Were there any Russians attempting to target the Hillary Clinton campaign? I find it very difficult to believe that the Russians only tried to reach out to the Trump campaign. And if they did the FBI debrief them on that? Because that would answer a lot of questions for us.
If they didn't do it for Trump and they did it for Hillary. then how is it possible the whole dossier issue that Clinton paid for, by the way, it was disseminated before the election to influence the American people. I'm sure there are people that probably read about hookers in the bed in Moscow. I'll be a little easier tonight. They probably said, I'm not voting for that guy. But those were all paid for Russian lies. If they cared about Russian interference, why didn't that come up? Or John, Uranium One, where they, we all, you know, Sarah knows, I know, the informant. We've all spoken to the informant. The informant describing kickbacks, bribery, money laundering, extortion, Putin's thugs in America, and they still got approval, and the Clinton Foundation still got their money in terms of a kickback to the foundation.
I think there's growing evidence, Sean, that the Clinton political opposition research effort was an effort to make sure that Hillary Clinton's vulnerabilities on Moscow would be off limits in the election by putting Trump on the defensive. And from that, we put an entire criminal investigation in 2 years of our country with still no evidence of collusion. At this point, we have a few people pleading guilty to lying about unrelated events in that. It's a real travesty to have gone through that.
Taxi medallions and people not paying their taxes.
Now, I got a little bit of breaking news for you.
Get out of jail free cards, but...
A little bit of breaking news.
Go into the Uranium One and the dossier issue. You get the last word.
Oh, okay. Well, Sean, let me tell you this. When it comes to Mueller, we know this for a fact, that William Campbell, and I talked to him today, I spoke with him, and he said, look, he was informed of everything about Rosatom, about the uranium deal. He was in charge of the FBI then. So we have to ask ourselves this. Where are we going from here? We have so much evidence on the other side. Is there going to be a special counsel investigating the other side? What we've seen in Hillary Clinton, what we've seen with our weaponization of our intelligence apparatus. When is that going to happen?
There's something percolating that probably will break Monday. You're both smiling. Do either one of you want to give the audience, heads up?
I'll give you some breaking news right now, Sean. Just 2 hours ago, federal prosecutors assigned to John Huber, the U.S. attorney investigating the Clintons, reached out to a whistleblower in the Clinton Foundation. The first time we've seen contact between a Clinton Foundation whistleblower and that particular federal office, that just happened tonight.
Are you talking about the one whose home was raided?
No, this is a different whistleblower that you might learn. You'll learn a lot more about on Monday, I bet you.
All right, we'll learn that on Monday. Sarah, last word. What is it?
Give us a preview of Monday's coming attraction. I think we've got a lot to look forward to on Monday, Sean, and I think that the American people are going to see that there was happening behind the scenes at the FBI as well as the Department of Justice, and Michael Horowitz have been doing a very deep dive into this, and there's going to be a lot of breaking news in the next months and the months to come.
Amazing, the year of the boomerang. We were right all along. Continues. Thank you both.
This is building up to be the biggest scandal. Dan Bongino says it, so does Sean Hannity and others. But right now you got Madoff, Rachel being the most popular cable program for this last week. So the propaganda on the mainstream media is working. But I watch religiously Sean and all these other people. And I'm on that side, and I'm on the side of truth. This other propaganda is being described. You'll hear this coming up in a second with Harmeeni Dillon being interviewed by Tucker Carlson, and she says that there's a monopoly here. There's a tyranny of fascistic tyranny is the way she describes it. But I came up with another word. A tyranny of propaganda is one of the ideas that I came up with. But you're going to hear this interview that Tucker Carlson has with Harmeeni Dillon. And listen closely. It's about Google and about the actions and that might be taken to curb some of their power and so forth. But it's really interesting, and we've got to stick with these issues big time. But listen to this carefully.
Harmeeni Dillon is an attorney who has frequently, at cost to herself, stood up to big tech, and she joins us tonight. Harmeeni, thank you very much for
Thanks,
coming
Tucker.
On tonight. So this, again, as I just said to Mr. Epstein, yet another example of evidence from within this company, and there are other examples like it from Facebook, that show that they're not on the level, that they're lying to us, and that they could undermine the very basis of our democracy. Let me ask you the same question. Why is Congress standing by in the face of this evidence and doing nothing?
Let me add to that. Why is the Department of Justice not opening up antitrust investigations?
Well, exactly.
Why is the Federal Trade Commission not investigating them for their deceptive trade practices and failure to disclose their manipulation of data and theft of data from Americans and others? So today itself, the European Union opened up a new, its fourth in the last 2 years, investigation into Google for antitrust issues for manipulating search. Guess what? And so far they've been fined $7.1 billion in Europe in the last 17 months, but Zippo here in the United States on the same issues. And one of the reasons, Tucker, is that these companies, both of them, are very adept at spreading money around Capitol Hill, including through the use of a former Republican Congresswoman, Susan Molinari. And those are their lobbyists, and they're very effective. That's why you see legislators backing off for the most part. But we are talking about fascistic, control of our data in a way that is perceived as benevolent by, certainly by liberals, and is not being criticized at all by the right. I think it's a very dangerous situation.
So, but what's the point? I mean, just as a macro question, what's the point of having a government, of sending half your income every year to Washington, if they won't protect you from the most basic and obvious threat to our entire system, which is these companies? Like, why do we have a government if they won't stand up to Google and Facebook?
Well, interestingly, I think we're going to see some action on the part of these companies, against these companies, I should say, in the new Congress, because liberals are concerned about the data theft, much more so than conservatives are. But we're still not going to see anything about this bias in terms of viewpoint. In addition to what you've covered on your segment tonight so far, obviously there's suppression of YouTube videos on an ideological basis. Google also discourages its advertisers from advertising on conservative platforms like Breitbart and others. Google's search engine has labeled the California Republican Party as having Nazi ideology and Republican women as being enablers. It is the most despicable, defamatory work, and it is all protected by the Communications Decency Act, which members of Congress certainly could edit and change, but they don't. And so I'm very disappointed in our government, our conservative government, frankly, in Washington on its failure to act on these issues.
So as you just pointed out very quickly, these companies operate in the way that they do very profitably because they have a special exemption from the Congress, which could revoke that exemption because they're not platforms, they're media companies. Of course, they're editing. Can name just, if you would, since we're live now, three or four members of Congress who, you know, might lead the charge against this.
Well, I don't think any members of Congress currently have identified themselves as being hostile to this, but, you know, Jim Jordan certainly seems to be somebody who's familiar with these issues. Matt Gaetz is another. I think these guys are sensitive to these issues, but, and I don't think they're beholden to big tech. Maybe they haven't been there long enough to have that sink in yet. But we have had senators, Mike Lee, for example, has looked at the antitrust situation and then backed off. I'd like to see our Senate, newly constituted with more votes, take a hard look at this, have some hearings, really put them on spot.
Yeah.
Sundar Pichai is going to be testifying in Congress next week. I have suggested that definitely some hard questions need to be asked, and I know that there's an intention to ask some hard questions.
Well, I hope that
week.
Happens.
So we'll see what happens.
Hope they get moving. Harmeet Dhillon, you've been brave on this question. We're grateful for it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up next is an interview that Sean Hannity had last Friday night with Newt Gingrich. And he sets it out. He starts talking about that this whole plan has been contrived by President Trump's enemies is to destroy the presidency and just destroy Trump. And this is really what we're talking about here. But Newt Gingrich lays it out. My gosh. So listen to this a second. Here we go.
All right, welcome back to the special edition of Hannity, Trump versus the resistance. Now, as the Mueller witch hunt continues, there's still no evidence of any Trump-Russia collusion. So ask yourself, why was the Michael Cohen filing done on the eve of this high-stakes G20 summit? This is not the first time this has happened. Remember the Paul Manafort indictment, George Papadopoulos' guilty plea, both announced just days before the president left for a historic 12-day trip to Asia. And White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, she said today that the probe may be hurting the U.S. ties with Moscow, all suggesting that the special counsel may be trying to derail the Trump presidency in more ways than one. Joining us now with reaction, author of the bestseller, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback, Fox News contributor and former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. You know, one of the things, you talk about the success of Trump in your book, but then you also have the warnings, what the president needs to be aware of. Obviously, I stand on my original premise. Mueller is out for blood. Mueller picked this team of Democratic donors, even Clinton's old lawyer at the foundation, Andrew Weissman and company, for a reason. He wants to hurt the president as badly as he can. That's why he's offering all these get out of jail free cards if you just say whatever we want you to say.
Look, I think we ought to quit talking about the Mueller investigation and start talking about the Mueller-Trump destruction project. Because it's very clear that Mueller and his left-wing lawyers are methodically doing everything they can to destroy the president. And in effect, to create a non-justice department, because this is not justice, a non-justice department coup d'etat in which they undo the votes of the American people and they pile enough junk. And that's what all the stuff is. They pile enough junk around that they just gradually overwhelm President Trump. And I think if you start and you look at everything they've been doing and you said, you know, from day one, this was never about Russian collusion. This was never about finding the truth. This was about a methodical effort to destroy President Trump by any means necessary. And you look at some of the things they're getting indictments on. I mean, again, somebody goes and lies to the Congress. That's stupid. They deserve to be indicted. I'm not in any way defending Cohen. But they were lying about stuff that wasn't a crime. It's a point that Andy McCarthy keeps making as a former Justice Department lawyer, that none of the underlying patterns were crimes. People are allowed to be in business. People are allowed to do deals. People are allowed to do lots of stuff. And yet what you get, of course, is the headline in the elite media that somehow this is another terrible blow to Trump. What it really is further proof that Mueller's interest is in destroying the Trump presidency. And your point is exactly right. They had no reason to release this as the president goes to an important meeting in Argentina with 19 other world leaders. I mean, this is sort of like undermining America for partisan reasons.
You've been in a minority in Congress, and you were the speaker in Congress. A lot easier to be the speaker, I'm just guessing. Although you take a lot more incoming, let's be honest. You took your fair share. So we don't have an agenda, the Democrats in the House. All they're saying, endless investigation. Nancy Pelosi's first agenda item, she announced earlier today, release Donald Trump's taxes. Now, that's not going anywhere in the Senate. Good thing the president went out to campaign very hard to keep the Senate, because that's going to help him. But it's still the intention. I don't see an agenda to serve the American people.
Well, and remember, Sean, this is what people have to understand. There's a 1923 law which allows the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee to request the tax returns of any American. So I can imagine a circumstance where the new chairman, a liberal Democrat, will exercise his legal right. The Internal Revenue Service will turn over the Trump tax returns, which are supposedly secret, and the release of which would be a felony. And then by some magic method that all of us will be shocked at, they'll turn out on page one of the New York Times. So I would not, I mean, these people are playing for blood. This is more like the terror in the French Revolution than it is like traditional American politics. They will do anything, break any rules, and I think break any law, if it will enable them to get Donald Trump.
Let's go to the border. You know, it was interesting during the campaign. Oh, they're just trying to gin up racial tensions. This isn't real. They're 1,000 miles away. Well, they're not 1,000 miles away anymore. And Border Patrol agents pelted with rocks, bottles, projectiles. But using the same tactics that Obama used, interestingly, nobody cared then, tear gas to disperse crowds that were trying to break down the wall and enter the country and charge into the country illegally. Pretty severe crisis in Mexico. Then you have 600 criminals identified by the DHS and Mexican officials that have infiltrated the caravan. Where do we go from here? How do you stop that from happening?
Well, first of all, every citizen should ask their Democratic congressman or senator, are you really comfortable with 600 identified criminals coming into the United States in just one particular wave? Remember, if they get to come in this time, the number of people who will be coming north in the next 6 months will be amazing, because people are down there watching to see what happens. And I think it's astonishing to me that Senator Schumer, Speaker Pelosi, nobody's held accountable when you get a report from the Department of Homeland Security that in this particular group there are 600 people who are convicted criminals. Now, I suspect the average American, if that was presented to them, which it won't be by the elite news, won't be on the New York Times page one, but that's an astonishing piece of data. So I think that the president simply has to come back home, keep driving the points. He's the one person who can break through the news blackout and get the truth to the American people.
Strategically, would it be a good or bad idea to either, A, use the reconciliation process to get full funding of the wall, or for the president to say, I'll just shut down the government and just wait?
Well, I think the president's already indicated what he may do is shut the border and see how rapidly that causes a real pain level. I mean, the number of American businesses that will be knocking on doors in Congress within 2 days will be amazing.
All right, Mr. Speaker, thanks for being with us.
Then we have Newt Gingrich saying it's just a destructive mechanism. And why did they go after this Cohen thing and release all that information right before he took off for the G20 in Buenos Aires? So, I mean, this thing is so partisan now, it's getting to be so political. But so there you have it. We laid it out pretty well with a lot of different interviews. And I just don't see things getting any better. That Rachel Maddow report that she was number one this last week is not good. I mean, you know, she puts out a lot of propaganda, in my opinion, and her facts are bent and skewed quite a bit. And she acts like she has all these facts and so on, but I don't agree with her reporting whatsoever. But anyway, what we've got to try to do here, and this is what I see, that it's a transformation that has occurred in America. And it's taken decades to have an effect that is beginning to be having an effect at the polls now. And so the leftward leaning, you could say collective left, is beginning to turn out the vote. I think the Beto vote in Texas showed that. I mean, it showed very clearly that Beto pulled very strongly in the cities, okay? But in the rural and small cities throughout Texas, Ted Cruz did win. So he did win by a few points, but not overwhelming win, see? So that's what you've got to look at in that situation, where it was a win, but it wasn't just a stupendous win like it might have been without a, you know, Beto was a stronger candidate than anyone realized. And so that's really what surprised everybody. And so that's what's going on in the country, is that we've got a public out there that's been indoctrinated by the collective left for years. And they're Democrats. Some are well-meaning and so forth, and some are very conniving. And through this conditioned process, we've got a collective left that believes. Now George Herbert Walker Bush is dead at 94, and that just came out also in the news today. And so there's all kinds of people making all kinds of statements about him being such a fine person and everything. And I'm not going to make any statements on that, but he did pass away at 94. I think Barbara preceded him. He was the 41st president of the United States, and I think he had one term of office for 4 years, and then he was not reelected to office. But anyway, he did pass away at 94, and that's been some of the predominant news here of late. we had the big earthquake in the Anchorage area, a 7 point whatever, and that really caused a lot of damage in the Anchorage area. And so we're waiting to hear back from friends up there. And there were people that did get they got shook pretty badly, but right as of now there's no fatalities that we know of. But they're just gathering it together, and there's photographs on all kinds of news media now of whole highways being wiped out and devastated, with big cracks down the middle of the highways or part of the highway missing, caved in and so forth when the shaking did occur. So we've got that going on as part of the news. The Paradise fire has been finally put out. It was devastating to Paradise, California. There's all kinds of tributes that you're going to see. Oh, the G20 conference, the prince, the crown prince, and Putin had a very warm handshake over there today. We don't have a lot of different information right now from the G20. It's about 3 hours ahead of us. President Xi, China Xi, and Trump, they voiced hope for progress on trade dispute. What I played last week was Steve Bannon, and he says that nobody has ever confronted China like Trump has. And Trump is saying, hey, we're not going to take it anymore. And that's why he has such a large following. Trump is a fighter, and he's trying to present a level field for us. Now, these recent GM announcements of closing plants and so forth, Trump was not very happy with that at all. There's rumors now in the rumor mill, and you got QAnon in the background on some of this stuff, that there will be indictments on some of the major players in these scandals that have occurred in the past. Now, I don't know if that's ever going to come to fruition, but we're hearing now strong rumors that there will be indictments. Now, I don't know exactly who's going to be indicted and who will be and who will not be. We've had all these sealed indictments, thousands of them. We've had rumors of that for several years now, but we haven't seen any real indictments occur yet. There was a referral, though, just to Huber, and he's one of the investigators on the Uranium One. And so there's supposed to be news out. It just broke on Sean Hannity. John Solomon broke the news. He said a new whistleblower is coming forward Monday. And so I think that's very, very important to watch. And he seemed to indicate that it would be concerning the foundation, the Clinton Foundation. One of the whistleblowers of the Clinton Foundation recently was raided by 16 FBI agents. My gosh, what are we doing? This is getting tough now, and they're going to go out and just raid people and try to, you know, discredit them. Anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you. We broadcast from Austin, Texas every Saturday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. We want to thank Charlotte Littlefield Brown and myself. We want to thank everyone for listening. And, you know, we've just got to keep moving on these scandals and try to uncover and try to do what's right for this country. The liberal left is not helping us on this. They think that they're fighting this Trump, and they characterize him as an evil person, but that's mischaracterization of our president. But thank you very much for listening, and God bless each and every one of you out there. Good night.